All right, welcome to this Friday edition of My Car Guru. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. My daughter taught me how to say my car or the car guru in Spanish, and it is El Sabio del Coche. So, you know, if I were to introduce myself as the car guru, I would say, Me llamo Leonardo Lawson, El Sabio del Coche. Would that be an impressive way to start this show? Would you think that I can actually speak another language? Well, I can tell you what, I can't. I got through, let's see, my last Spanish class was in high school. I had it in junior high school. And then I had it in high. You remember what junior high school was? That was like what? 7 through 9. That was before they screwed everything up. And now it's I don't even know what it is now. I mean, they're even putting elementary school people with junior high schoolers. High school is now what? 9 through 12. I don't think ninth graders need to be with 12th graders. Do you? I mean, I don't know if they're in the halls at the same time, but they shouldn't be. Those high schoolers, they misbehave sometimes. And, you know, we don't want those young ones learning any bad habits from the old ones too soon. They're going to learn enough bad habits when they get out of school. But anyway, Abby and I went to Birmingham, Alabama on Tuesday. And unbelievable experience. We left early so that we could go to the Barber Motorsports Park and Museum. Now, most of you would say, yeah, big deal. What, car museum? What, they have 20, 30 cars in it? No, it's the largest collection of motorcycles in the world. Guinness Book of World Records. They estimate that there are over 1,600 motorcycles in this museum. He patterned the museum. He wanted it to be as impressive as the Guggenheim Museum. Have you ever seen a Guggenheim Museum? They're really crazy looking on the outside and on the inside. And they have a very interesting way of presenting their artwork. Exactly what Mr. Barber did. Mr. Barber was from a dairy family. They owned farms and they developed an empire and sold it to a company. I can't remember the name of the company they sold out to. But apparently they did pretty well and provided him with enough liquidity to build the most amazing museum. Just go online and look at it. Barber Motorsports Museum or Motorcycle Museum. There's more than motorcycles in there, though. But everything, I mean, folks, I didn't even know this existed. It's a steam-powered motorcycle. Be really easy to burn your leg on it. But this thing, you know, when I saw it, I said, you got to be kidding me. A steam-powered motorcycle. But everything, you know, you see all the Indians. If you watch, like me, you watch American Pickers and, you know, Mike always freaks out over the Indian motorcycles and the Excelsiors and the Sears. Yeah, Sears made gorgeous motorcycles. Vincent's, I'm trying to think of some of the other names. Of course, Indian and Harley-Davidson and stuff like that. I mean, and the way these things are displayed is what's so unique. It's almost like you took motorcycles and mounted them on the walls, you know, as a piece of art. But you know what? It is art, just like cars are art. This is just a different expression. A lot of people don't look at cars as art because they just don't appreciate design. Boy, I do. I mean, it's just something that really, I guess it's my artistic side of my brain, which has always been there. It's just something that I enjoy doing. I love going to an art studio. I remember my dad took me to the Chicago Museum of Art, or no, Chicago Institute of Art. They're on, I guess it's Michigan Avenue. And I was just amazed. They had this room that was nothing but Western art. And there was another room, you know, just these paintings that you see, that you've seen in books all of these years, and all of a sudden there it is. And, you know, I'm granted, there was a time where I would just kind of blow through there and say, yeah, where's the popcorn? But now I just really appreciate that. But that's what I found myself doing at Barber's Museum. I mean, folks, there's just no way for me to put it into words to describe how beautiful this place was. And again, it's how they display these race. Also, I forgot to say there are race cars in there. He's a big Lotus fan. Did you know Lotus made cars? Yeah. Famous company in England. And they actually won the Indianapolis 500, a lot of Formula One races, and had some very famous drivers like some guy named Mario Andretti and Jim Clark and people like that. But, you know, then they've got a bunch of those Formula One cars and Indy cars and stuff like that in this museum. But it is absolutely dominated by motorcycles. And so, anyway, if you are a motorcycle lover, or if you like art, then you need to get to Birmingham, Alabama, and go to this museum, because I can assure you, you will not be disappointed. They also, while he was building this monstrous building, I think the building was $77 million is how much it cost. While he was doing that, he said, you know, let's build a racetrack. So he built a 2.38-mile racetrack, and it just carves its way up and down these beautiful hills in this farmland, what used to be farmland, and through the woods, and then he landscaped it. He made it look like Augusta National. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, you know what Augusta National, that's where they play the Masters. You ever watch the Masters on TV and how pretty everything is? Well, that's what this racetrack looks like. And I'm not kidding you. Maybe not totally up to the level of the Masters, but it's close. And so, let's say that you want to drive a race car. Or something close to a race car. They have something there called the Porsche Driving Experience. You can go online to PorscheDrivingExperience.com or just Google it, and you can see what that would be like. If you are, you still got a few years left in, you got a little bit of coordination left. You know, you don't have to drive really fast. You don't have to be the fastest driver. But if you got a little pocket change, a little extra, and just go in there and see what it's like. I'm actually doing the Porsche Driving Experience with my brother and two other friends in early July at Atlanta, where their North American headquarters are for Porsche. So we get to drive Porsche GT3s. That's a really hot race car. It's really close to a street legal race car, kind of like the Ford GT500 or the GT350, the Mustang, I'm trying to say. Those are really race cars that are legal to drive on the street, and that's what a Porsche GT3 is, except it's faster and a lot more expensive. But we get to drive around this racetrack, and my maximum liability, if I wreck it, is I bought some insurance. My maximum liability is $2,500. But I don't plan on wrecking it. I'm going to be somewhat careful. But I'm on a racetrack, and I've got a professional driver in the seat that's coaching me. You know, and I'm sure my coordination at 65 years old is not quite what it was when I was 25 years old. I think I'm wiser, and I do love to drive, and I like to drive fast. Ask my wife. But there are disadvantages to that. But what else do I need to say about Barber? That's pretty much it. I mean, if you know anybody that really knows motorcycles, they probably heard of this place, and they may have even been there before. But to see how technology advanced, I'm looking at a picture of one of these motorcycles right now that has a syringe mounted right in front of, right beside the gas tank. It's full of black stuff. What do you think that's for? Well, I'll tell you here in just a minute. Okay, so let's just pretend you're going down the road, and all of a sudden your oil light comes on. And you say, well, that's not good. And all of a sudden you say, oh, I forgot to lubricate my engine. So there's this syringe. That's hard for me to say. Syringe. Doesn't have an, it's not S-H, it's S-Y, I think. Syringe. And so you depress the syringe, and oil goes into your engine. And then the oil light goes off. Well, that's, you don't have to do that, do you? No, the oil pretty much is, the engine takes care of that. The engine, you know, has its own pumping system, circulation system for oil. You know, it's got a circulation system for antifreeze as well, you know, to keep the engine cool. But you got to keep all those reciprocating parts on the inside of the engine lubricated, or it will just seize up. And so, well, that was a problem back in the early teens with motorcycles, and maybe it was for cars as well, but with motorcycles, you know, they just hadn't figured out any place to put, you know, like a reservoir of oil. And they burned a lot of oil. They hadn't really refined the whole piston ring thing. you know, where the pistons are sliding up and down inside the cylinder. And, you know, there's these little rings. They're called piston rings. They go around, and there's an oil ring, and there's a compression ring. There's multiple rings in an engine. And sometimes they wear out in cars after a long period of time. And so oil starts coming from where it's supposed to be and going into the combustion chamber where it's not supposed to be. And so it goes away. So the oil level starts to go away. That's why you should check your oil every now and then, at least every other fill up. I bet there's not 10% of the people out there that check their own oil anymore. Used to, we had to, because, you know, when car, the tolerances and the quality wasn't quite there that it is today. And, you know, most cars will use basically zero oil. They'll use a little bit, you know, just a minute amount between oil changes. But some cars, sometimes there's a problem. You know, there's a ring that's not exactly right, and some oil is actually getting into the combustion chamber, and or it's leaking onto your garage floor, and over time you lose oil. Well, see, these old motorcycles didn't have a circulation system, and they lost a lot of oil in the process. So it wasn't something that light came on, because they didn't have lights. They didn't have warning lights or anything like that. They just instinctively knew, okay, I better inject a few squirts of oil in it. And that's what that was, that black stuff in that syringe. So you've got this device there, and you've got a glass tube, and you can see how much is oil in it, and they would just pump it into the engine. And it was being a responsible car owner. And that's what I encourage other people to do, is be responsible. So anyway, Abby and I shot a bunch of TV commercials for the year. So what we do is we go to this advertising agency called Strong Automotive. Isn't that a great name? The owner's name is actually John Paul Strong. His dad started the agency. Do you remember the Don't You Buy No Ugly Truck? You remember that? We used to be the dealer that advertised Ugly Truck. Everybody remembered the Ugly Truck campaign. Well, not everybody. It was kind of a nationwide, mostly in the South, though. And but we were the Ugly Truck licensee for this area, meaning we paid them a fee and they let us, you know, use their material. And Granny would get on there and just make people laugh and stuff. But the problem was, it was really funny, but people didn't really remember who the Ugly Truck dealer was, or the non-Ugly Truck, because she would make fun of other people's trucks. She would say, "Don't you buy no Ugly Truck," and it was kind of funny. Well, these were the people that created that. And so our relationship goes back to the early 80s. I got away from them. We started doing all of our marketing ourselves. But folks, it just got so complicated about 4 years ago. I said, okay, I'm done. I can't handle all this internet stuff. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I understood radio, TV, newspaper, direct mail. But all this internet stuff, you know, Facebook marketing, YouTube, Google, you know, maximizing your organic search versus your paid search. It was too much. I didn't really want to know, because I was getting old at the same time. When you get old, you want less detail. At least that's me. So I talked to Abby and Max, my nephew, and I said, let's try an agency for a while. Are you sure you want to spend that much money, Dad? I said, well, it really doesn't cost anything, because, you know, we don't pay them. The television stations and the radio stations where we advertise pay them. That's pretty cool, isn't it? So they get a commission for placing advertisement on TV. So, you know, a lot of the dealers that you see, like in local advertising, you know, if you watch WCYB or Channel 11 or whatever, and you see varying degrees of quality on their commercials. You know, some of them seem very amateuristic or amateurish. I don't know what the word is there either. See, I'm struggling with that and syringe. But let's just say they don't look professional. So anyway, you see others that are really quite good. And how does that happen? Well, some of the dealers, let's just talk about TV advertising. They write their own commercials and they perform their own commercials, and they'll have JHL or CYB or KPT or whatever the radio, TV station is, come in and shoot the commercials on their lot. And so they pay typically a small production fee, and then they run their advertising. Now, with me, My production fees are higher, but I think I get a lot better product, and they make it easy. So we shot 7 months worth of TV commercials in 3.5 hours. And they're already, they have all the scripts done and everything. Of course, I have a lot of input into it. I tell them what I like and what I don't like. And then they record it, and then they put it all together for us. And they handle all of that internet advertising, which is vital right now. It's not, advertising is different. You still see a lot of dealers talking about price, price, price. But, you know, it's really a false premise because the availability is so low. And, I see several of the bigger dealers in East Tennessee. I'm not going to call any names out or anything, but anytime they run a payment, they're talking about a lease. And the only way you know that is by reading the fine print, which you can't read unless you have a magnifying glass prepared and you're right up against the TV and then you pause it and so that you can read the 7 paragraphs of disclaimers. If you see an advertisement for a car and it says it's $299 a month, you better be reading the fine print. Now, I know that has an appeal to some people, but, I'd rather just not say that. I'd rather, right, today you don't have to. You just say, well, we have a good availability, which we don't. Because right now we have these shortages and all you can do is just pretty much order what somebody wants. We take about 20 to 25 sold orders for Ford a month, and we don't take them for Nissan because you can't order Nissans. You can't order Hondas, and you can't order certain other things. German cars you can order, custom order, and have it built and shipped to your local dealer the way you want it. Domestic cars, you can do that as well, Ford, GM, Chrysler, and so forth. But if, Toyota, Honda, Nissan, you don't order them. They just send you stuff, and hopefully they send you what you can sell and what you want. I hope nobody takes exception to that because I know I'm right, because I am El Sabio de Coche. So anyway, I'm going to take my last break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, I'm back. I don't know where to tell you to go to get really good, accurate, non-pressurized information about car buying, especially if you go onto the lot of a dealership. And, really, that's what most people don't like to do. And I get it. I understand. They're afraid of salespeople. And a lot of the salespeople are pretty jicky. And so, you just don't feel comfortable with it. You get that pressure. You get on the lot. How can I help you? And then they're asking, well, what's your budget? That's when you get in the car, lock the door, and drive away. But if they don't say that and they're professional, and you obviously got somebody who's at least acting like they have your best interest at heart, trying to find out what you're trying to accomplish today. I mean, really, that's one of the main questions that I've always asked. If you come in to buy a car from me and you haven't really told me what you're trying to do, but I know you wouldn't be here, you're not here to, look at giraffes or anything. You're here to look at cars. So I'm going to say, well, what would you like to accomplish today? Isn't that a nice question? And what if you just say, well, I'm just looking. I'm just trying to gather information. Then that opens the door to a lot of more questions and gets you to the place where you want to be. Somebody says they're just looking. Do you think they ever end up buying? Yes, they do. Just like you do when you go to Dick's Sporting Goods and somebody walks up to you and says, can I help you? And you say, no, I'm just looking. And then you go over and order and get a pair of tennis shoes and some, really tight exercise pants and a kayak. Well, you weren't just looking. Did you lie? Yeah, I guess you did. You fully intended to buy those really tight exercise pants, but you didn't want anybody to bother you, did you? That's why you said you were just looking. Well, that happens at car dealerships too. Well, the best way to avoid that is to go through the internet department. Now, when you submit an internet inquiry at Gateway Ford, for example, or Gateway Nissan, it's probably going to be Katie that's going to be getting back with you. Now, Katie is wonderful. I've had some very great compliments. Just try us out if you want to see what it's like. It's like my professor, Wild Bill Cherry, down at the University of Tennessee teaching economic geography. He said, if you don't believe it, check it out. That was the way he actually talked. And, you know, sometimes you have to do this. So if you don't believe it as far as internet, then just check with Katie because she'll show you how it's supposed to be done. And if you're not ready, you're not ready. You know, so you're still probably at most dealerships going to get a little push if you go into the dealership. That's just, those people are still working there. I'll tell you what, they're getting really spoiled right now, though, because it's been too easy for too long. You think, well, I thought we had a pandemic. Yeah, we did. With the shortage created a much greater demand than supply, so salespeople were able to get lazy. Not all of them. If you're a salesperson, I'm not meaning to, I'm not talking about you. But you know what I'm talking about. If you're working with other salespeople, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's some lazy people out there that all they think is they just got to show somebody something, give them a price that's over way over window sticker, and they're going to buy it. And if they get any pushback, they start fussing at the desk manager. But you know it when you're talking to somebody like that. Just use your judgment. Use your common sense. If you get too much pressure, I always say just leave. You know, you might say bye to them. Thank you. But no thank you. And get in your car and go to another store. You know, you're free to do that. And you know, yeah, prices are high. If you can wait, then wait. But you've got another year and a half to wait if you're thinking about waiting for, you know, the lots to be full, and maybe a lifetime. I don't know that the lots will ever be full again. They're going to be a whole lot fuller than they are now, but they're not going to look like they did. It's a recipe for abuse of customers, a lot of false advertising, and much greater expense for manufacturers because they have to incentivize vehicles, and much greater expense for dealers because they have to floor plan all those cars and pay all those carrying costs. So, you know, one of the things I try to do on this show is give you an insider look. If you're not interested, you know, you don't have to listen. But if you do, I appreciate it. If I can help you in some way on a specific issue that you have as far as your car is concerned, then shoot, call me. Here's my cell phone number. I only got one, 423-552-2020. That's easy to remember. If you want to write it down, 423-552-2020. Or you can send me a message to LennyLawson2020@gmail.com. And Lenny is L-E-N-N-I-E. How else would you spell it? Maybe with a Y. Okay, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you Monday. Have a great weekend.